Merry Christmas. We are so glad that you are joining us today. To friends and family and those of you that might be joining us for the first time, we want to welcome you, and we really hope that you have had a good Christmas so far. So we've been in a series called Getting to Christmas, and we've been talking about some of the things that can get in the way of us experiencing that love, that joy, that peace that we talk so much about this time of year. Christmas is good news. This is what the angels declare to the shepherds. This is good news for all people. And yet, life happens. And on our way to Christmas, we get bombarded with distractions. We talked about that week one. We can become bitter, and we talked about that week two. And last week, we talked about how that we can get overcome by the need to control all the variables that are going on in our life, even including what God is doing. And as a result, we end up missing out on Christ while celebrating Christmas. But Christmas is here, right? So we're all good. We made it. But technically, Christmas is just the beginning. Did you know that in the traditional church calendar, Christmas doesn't start till Christmas Day, and it's 12 days long? In fact, that's what the song, 12 Days of Christmas, is referring to. Now, I did not know that for the longest time. I grew up in a church. My particular faith tradition, though, didn't put a lot of stock in the church calendar, and we tended to frown on some of the more liturgical forms of worship. And so, depending on your background, you may not know that. Something else that many of us may not know about, or we may know, but we've never really considered how it changes our understanding of the Christmas story, is that the wise men were not actually present at Jesus' birth, probably not even close to his birth. In fact, of all the parts of the Christmas story, the wise men are perhaps the most mythical. And by that I mean, they're the one component of the Christmas story that is the most altered, the most adapted based on tradition, culture, and a human phenomenon you may have heard of before called the Mandela Effect. So the Mandela Effect happens when large numbers of people have the same memory of an event, a cultural icon, but that memory is actually false. So let me give you a couple examples. People swear that there is a brand of peanut butter called Jiffy, but there isn't, and there never has been. The peanut butter is called Jif. And well, we probably have gotten Skippy, its competitor, mixed up in there. Or try this, the classic Disney film Snow White. The Wicked Queen says to the mirror on the wall, what does she say? Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all, right? That's what she says. Nope, that's not what she says. She says, magic mirror on the wall. Okay, now that I've probably ruined some of your childhood, let me continue to ruin it with the Christmas story. Most people, when we think of Jesus being born, we picture him, right, in the manger, or he's in the arms of his mother. Joseph is nearby. There's animals scattered all around. The shepherds have come. There's probably an angel somewhere nearby, maybe up in the sky. And there are three solitary wise men, complete with their camels and gifts. But not only were there not three wise men at the birth of Jesus, there wasn't three. Oh, well, we really don't know how many there were. We know there were more. There was more than one because, well, grammar. It says wise men. But it could have been two. It could have been 10. We get to this number because of the number of gifts they brought. And usually when we picture the wise men, we picture three solitary people going a long way on their camels by themselves. And perhaps they did. But it's probably likely that they actually had more people with them, servants, hired guides that helped them travel the distance from where they came to where Jesus was, which probably took at least several weeks, if not months. I think the wise men of all the different characters in the Christmas story, they come with the least amount of detail. There's this air of mystery about them, and it leaves us with a ton of questions. And it's fun. I love to try to unlock the mystery surrounding them. And I think it's good that we look at history and we look at the geopolitical world of Jesus' day and try to figure out maybe where they were coming from. But if we're careful, that's all we end up doing, right? These wise men, we speculate about them and we kind of play with them like little kids, you know, that play with the nativity characters underneath the tree, and they become little more than props in a grander story. And on our way to Christmas, and when we get here, we maybe miss something that they have to teach us. And so if you have your Bible, you can open in your app, scroll in there, open with your physical Bible to the Gospel of Matthew. This is the first book in the New Testament, And we're going to start in chapter 2. And we're just going to do a start and stop and talk about the story of the wise men. All right, so Jesus, it says, was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. And about that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, "Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him." Okay, again, we don't know where they came from. They came from the east. So that's like me saying I got a friend out west. What west are we talking about? Now, Bible scholars have studied, and they think they probably came from the land of Persia. Specifically, they might have come from the city of Babylon, but we don't know. And there's been lots of speculation about what does it mean that they were wise men and that they had studied a star. Again, we don't know. We can make some assumptions that they were probably people with some resources and some education, potentially leaders in the land they come from. And they have traveled to Jerusalem. And I want you to pay special attention to the reason they say they have come to worship him, the newborn King of the Jews. Worship is what drives the wise men to Jesus. And I'm going to suggest that phrase, that they have come to worship him, gives us a clue to understanding the rest of the story of the wise men and Jesus. So let's keep reading. It says, King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. So King Herod called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, "Where is the Messiah supposed to be born?" "In Bethlehem in Judea," they said, "for this is what the prophet wrote. And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you, who will be the shepherd for my people Israel." So the wise men have made their way essentially to the capital of Israel, right? If a king is going to be born, this is where he's going to be born. This is the political center of Israel. And this is where the king is at. And like kings begat kings. That's how this works. And so as these men come in, these foreign men, and they begin asking questions, word spreads. Herod hears of it. He becomes disturbed. And Matthew tells us everyone in Jerusalem is actually disturbed by this. Now, we don't have time to go into all of the history that surrounds Herod and Israel and the Romans, but it was a very tenuous and volatile relationship. So Herod serves as a puppet king for Rome, but he's not liked by the Jewish people. But at the same time, King Herod is better than having a direct Roman ruler. And Herod has done some things to help the city. And so there's this tenuous relationship for everyone. And Herod is constantly playing this political game of grasping for power and holding on to it. And then Herod, the person, comes with his own set of issues. Just let me sum it up to you. He is divorcing women and marrying women left and right. He's violent and paranoid. In the end, Herod will have 9 wives with a total of 14 children. He will kill one of his wives, her brother, and grandfather, his mother-in-law, and 2 of his own sons just to maintain the throne. And so this is why Herod is a little upset when he hears that there's a newborn king, right? Herod doesn't want this because he wants the throne. And he also knows that Rome, if Rome finds out that there's another king in town, Rome will deal with it if Herod does not deal with it. And that will not be good for anyone. And the people in Jerusalem know this. And so what does Herod do? He's called all the religious leaders together that he has and asked them, "Well, tell me more." And once he's got this information, look at verse 7. He calls for a private meeting with the wise men. And he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. And then he told them, "Go to Bethlehem. Search carefully for the child. And when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too." Now, of course, Herod has no intention of worshiping Jesus, right? He is going to try to murder Jesus the first opportunity that he gets. But Herod, the ever political charmer and political player that he is, he convinces the wise men of his sincerity and his desire to worship. And so it says that the wise men set out to Bethlehem. Matthew continues and says that after this interview, the wise men went their way. And the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. Okay, before we get to Jesus and the wise men, have you ever wondered, not just at Herod's malicious intent and his unwillingness to consider Jesus, but at the people that were in the know, the religious leaders, the teachers, and the fact that they did not actually go and see, they didn't go check this out. I mean, doesn't it seem odd to you? They have the scriptures. There's news that this child will be born in Bethlehem, and there are foreigners that have come to their land. There's no way these foreigners could know this, and yet somehow they do. I know that speaks of like a miracle. This has to be God. And yet they still don't go and at least, I don't know, check it out. Now, I'm sure they have their reasons, right? The news is coming from Gentiles, from foreigners, people that were not like them, did not believe what they believed. And the human tendency, as we've all know, is to reject truth when it comes from someone who's not like us, who doesn't think like we do, who's maybe too different than us. But maybe they were worried and fearful of what would happen to their own family if they were to go and check out this new king. I mean, again, Herod is not, he seems a little paranoid and crazy. Maybe they were in denial and they couldn't accept that they had missed the signs that the Messiah had been born. Maybe they couldn't reconcile a God that would come in a small town or would tell other people and not them. Whatever their reasons, the wise men ventured to Bethlehem alone. However many wise men there were, however many people they had traveling with them, the same number that came into Jerusalem are the same number that leave Jerusalem, headed to Jesus to worship him. And that brings me to my first point. Everyone has to decide the worship issue. It doesn't matter who you are. King, priest, foreigner, citizen, shepherd, a nobody, somebody. This doesn't change regardless of your class, your nationality, ethnicity, education, status, position. Any marker that you use to identify yourself does not get you off the hook. Everyone has to decide who they will worship. King Herod had to decide, would he worship this king that was prophesied? Or was he going to worship the power and the position that he held? The religious leaders had to wrestle with, would they go and worship this newborn king, even though he was operating maybe not as quite as they expected? Or would they hold on to safety or the status quo or their own understanding? And even the wise men at this point have to make a decision. Will they continue with the new information they have? This new information that says, yep, there is going to be a newborn king born in the city of Bethlehem. But alongside this new information is the reality that no one but them is really interested in this king. So could it be that this is a little sketchy? And as we get to Christmas and we move beyond Christmas, you and I are going to have to do what they did. We are going to have to decide who and what will we worship? Who and what will we cling to? Okay, so let's talk about worship because it's interesting. This is actually something that the Bible never gives us a formal definition for. In other words, it doesn't exactly say worship is do, 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 do. However, the Bible does tell us what worship is because it shows us over and over all the different ways that we should worship, we can worship, and people do worship God. The shortest, maybe most simplest explanation or definition is worship is when we declare that something or someone is worthy. The English word literally means the state of something being worthy. And so when we worship God, we're saying that God is worthy. He has worth. And if we get even more specific and we look at all the ways that worship is done in Scripture, and the ways that we are compelled to worship, we can say that worship is when I recognize that someone or something is worthy, and then I value that. I see that worth as valuable, and then in light of that, I then act in a certain way. I adjust my life because of that thing being worthy and valuable. So when we speak of worshiping God, what we're talking about is a heart, a mind, and a body proposition. We recognize who God is. That's a mental act. We understand what that means for our lives and our world. That's a personal heart act. And then we act on that knowledge and personal understanding. It should have an effect on how we live. It isn't mere mental assent. It isn't just what I experience. It isn't just what I do. It is all of that together. It's recognizing who God is and allowing that to change me and act because it changed me. So is that what the wise men did? Do we see them worshiping God this way? Well, let's keep reading. Let's finish up their part of the story. It says, when they saw the star, They were filled with joy, and so they entered the house, and they saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down, and they worshiped him. Then they opened their treasure chest and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Okay, let's just walk through what they did. First thing they did, they bowed down. This is a physical response. It's probably one of the most common ways that we see worship show up in the Bible. To bow before someone is to submit. It is to surrender. It is to acknowledge who they are and that they are worthy. And so the wise men bow before Jesus in recognition that he is who they seek. He is the King of the Jews. But they don't stop there. They bow down, and it says that they worshiped, right? This indicates a heart and head response. Now, we don't know what that looked like, right? We don't have any details. Did they pray to God? Did they sing? Did they rejoice? Did they give thanks? Was it audible? Was it something they did in their heads quietly? We don't know. But we do know that they bowed, and then there was this response from them inside. They didn't just recognize who Jesus was, but they recognized the impact, what that meant for them. And they wanted that. But they don't just stop there. Matthew tells us that they bowed down, they worshiped, and they gave gifts, right? Unselfish gifts. No one asked them to bring gifts. No one required them to bring gifts. They brought gifts. They were generous. They brought gifts of value that were in response to the thing, the person that they valued. And I don't know that they ever knew, but those gifts were of great benefit to Jesus and his family when in just a few short days, they are going to have to flee and set up a new home in a foreign country. I think we can see how the wise men participated in what God was doing in the world. And that participation was part of their worship. In fact, service and serving is another way that worship shows up in Scripture. When we serve God, when we serve others, that also is worship. There's one more verse that goes with this story for the wise men. It's our last verse about them. Read verse 12 with me. When it was time to leave, they returned to their own country by another route, for God had warned them in a dream not to return to Herod. Okay, again, I got lots of questions about these wise men. So God warns them, don't go to Herod. But does he clue them in on exactly why? Does he tell them exactly what Herod is wanting to do? Does he tell them what other route they're supposed to take? Does that route actually end up costing them more time, more obstacles, more money? Or is it actually easier and ends up being better for them? Was there a risk? Does Herod know? And like, will he send people out after them? There's just so many questions that we don't know. But what we do know, if we will stop speculating and try to learn from their example, is that they don't go back to Herod. They go home another way. And they do so because they've had an encounter with the King, the real one, the God of the universe, who's wrapped up in the flesh of a baby boy. And that encounter has led them to worship. And as they worship with their mind and their hearts and their bodies and what their resources, it empowered them to do the next thing that God had for them. And that is true for you and I today. My worship today will determine my direction tomorrow. When you and I worship Jesus, when we fully understand and recognize who he is, we acknowledge, when we grasp, even with limited understanding, what that means for us and for our world, and we say, that's valuable, we see that, and then we respond, we find that tomorrow is different. We come to know him more personally. Our understanding grows, even while it may be limited. We begin to discover that there are lots of ways to serve him and to serve others. And our worship of him empowers us to make different choices and to live differently than we might have lived before. Worship isn't just the words I say. It's not just what I believe or do. It's this personal encounter I have with the God of the universe. And it involves all of me, and it changes me, and it empowers me and moves me forward. If I had to sum up the wise men's story, remembering that worship is what drove them to Jesus, it would be this. They got down on their knees to worship, and they stood up to live differently. And I think that's the question. There's a question in there for you and I. As we've gotten to Christmas and we're moving past it, we've come to the child that is Christ. How will we live differently? Now, this is again where I wish we had more information about the wise men. They've traveled so far to be with Jesus. What is life like once they get home? How is it different? What did people think? I mean, I think it's a fair assumption when you consider all they did to get to Jesus with the amount of information they had, that after getting to worship Jesus face to face, that their lives were different. But what changes did they make? What new things did they try? What did that actually look like? But perhaps this mystery, these unanswered questions of the wise men, is actually a gift to us. I think it teaches us a couple things. One thing is it teaches us that no matter who we are, no matter where we come from, it doesn't matter when it comes to worshiping Jesus. It doesn't matter what you did, do, you know, or don't know. All who want to come are included. Anyone can worship Christ. Anyone can know Jesus. It's an open invitation. You cannot outwear your welcome. You cannot come back too often. And the second thing, because we don't know a lot about the wise men's lives and what it was like for them back home, I think it teaches us that we don't have to know everything about what lies ahead. We don't have to know everything about what God is going to do or what he might ask of us. We can still worship him with all of our unanswered questions, with all of our unknowns. I think sometimes we get so hung up on live differently. We're wondering about the details and how are we going to do it? And will we even have the strength and the courage to do it? Forgetting that it's worship, our time with Jesus, that is going to empower us, enable us to go and live differently. And so now that you've worshiped Jesus or you've participated in a worship service, depending on where you are in your faith journey, what do you need to do? Do you need to take a step like the wise men did with the limited understanding you have and just begin to seek? Maybe you don't know what you think about this Jesus. Maybe you don't know if you're going to end up worshiping him, but you're curious. You keep being drawn in, and maybe it's time to take the next step and begin to seek. Maybe you found yourself kind of lost in the modern version of whatever Jerusalem or Herod's castle would be, his palace. You thought you'd find Jesus where you're at, and he feels like he's missing. He's not who you thought he would be. He didn't show up where you thought he would show up. And maybe the next step for you is to go back to what you do know, where Jesus said he would be, and keep following him. Maybe you do know the thing you need to do, but you're nervous, you're scared, you have questions. You don't know what the fallout will be. Can you take just one tiny step forward, knowing that the God that you worship is the same God that walks with you as you go forward? And then I don't know about you, but I think for me this often happens. It's not about living differently that is the problem. Is that I've forgotten to worship. I've forgotten how worship actually impacts me. When I recognize who he is, when I engage in that personal experience and offer what I have. And so maybe this week you start by finding time to just sit with the King who has come to sit with you. Will you join me in prayer? Christ, we thank you that you are the King who seeks us out. You sought out the wise men. Long before your birth, you sought them out so that they might come and worship you, so that they might know you. And it changed their life. Lord, I just ask that you would be with us as we move forward into the new year, that we would know that you are the same God. You seek us out. You call us to you. And you say, come and worship me. And in the worshiping, we are changed. In the worshiping, we are empowered to live differently. to follow you. Because Christmas is not just a one moment or one season. It is the truth that you are with us at all times and in all places. Amen. Again, we're so glad that you've joined us, and we look forward to continuing to worship with you in the new year.